Welcome to another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and every year the goal is to fight stigma, provide support, educate the public, and support people with mental illness and their families. The San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group has served the SLV for 50 years. They're committed to providing access to quality behavioral health services that enrich lives and promote wellness. Especially during this time, we all need to be aware of our mental health just as much as our physical health. Listen as four behavioral health experts delve into topics such as substance abuse, suicide, mental health for children and the elderly, overcoming the mental health stigma, and much more.
I'm Adam, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month, observed here in the San Luis Valley and across the country for over 70 years. Believe it or not, every year, millions of Americans face the reality of living with a mental illness. Especially during this time, your mental health is extremely important and is something to pay close attention to. Joining us remotely to discuss Mental Health Awareness Month and a whole lot more, from the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group, Victoria Romero, LPC, LAC, and the Chief Operating Officer, Bonnie Ortega, LPC, CAC3, Clinical Supervisor, Jamie Bogner, MS, LPC, Clinical Supervisor, and Azarel Madrigal Chase, the Grants Manager. This is great. We appreciate you all joining us. Thank you. Let's get right to it. Why is May Mental Health Month, and what is the importance of your own mental health?
One of the things that we really want to share with everyone when we think about our own mental health is that mental health isn't just the absence of an illness. When you're thinking about mental health, it's really overall well-being, how somebody feels in their overall wellness as a whole, whether that's happy, whether that's sad, whatever that might be. It isn't just looking at mental health as an illness. And I think that so many times when people talk about mental health, that's really where they go to begin with until they start to just look at it as more of a holistic way of looking at how we all feel, good and bad. And that's overall well-being and mental health.
As I understand, I was reading some National Council statistics, 1 in 5 adults in America experience a mental illness?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, how are mental health and substance abuse tied together?
What we've learned in the recent years is that most people who have substance use disorders also experience or have experienced in their lifetime mental health issues. And a lot of times they're using the substances to kind of medicate or, you know, minimize the symptoms of their mental health struggles. So we see a lot of trauma, we see a lot of anxiety, depression, and even some of the heavier, I guess, diagnoses such as schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, where people are using, they learn that substances can actually help make them feel better. It's just that it doesn't work long term, and then they end up with an addiction. The other thing is that we've learned if a person uses substances and by chance doesn't have a mental illness, they will experience trauma related to their substance use. And so then they end up with symptoms from trauma, which can include intense anxiety, panic attacks, nightmares, things like that.
Well, now that it's legal in many states, what about marijuana use? I mean, is it also considered substance abuse?
We tend to consider anything that can alter sort of what your body does natural can be abusive. And so, yes, marijuana, even though it's legal, just like alcohol, even though it's legal, can become an abusive substance. Even things that are less taboo can become addictive. And so we look at addictive behaviors as well as addictive substances, and anything has the ability to create one of those types of addiction, whether it's the behavior or the substance. What we know about marijuana use is that the marijuana today is not the same as the marijuana from years ago. And so there are things that we don't know and that we're still learning about how marijuana today can impact a person.
Well, let's discuss the stigma surrounding mental health. Why do you all believe there is a stigma to begin with regarding one's mental health?
This goes back to something that Bonnie mentioned earlier, that one, it's hard to understand mental illness. And there is the term mental health and mental illness used interchangeably. So mental illness is a condition that affects a person's thinking, their feeling, their mood, or their behavior. Whereas mental health is how we cope. It's our emotional, physiological, and social well-being. And I think that because those are so different for everybody, you know, if someone has a mental illness, even if they have the exact same mental illness, take anxiety, for example, how that anxiety impacts someone is going to look very different. So it's a very personalized illness. It's a very personalized recovery process. And because it may not look the same for everybody, it's really difficult to understand. And so I think anything that we don't understand, we tend to stigmatize. And I think there's the fear that if people are taking care of their overall mental health, it can mean that they have this long-term mental illness, which is not necessarily the case.
And I would just like to chime in. I mean, as we see historically, the declaration of May as Mental Health Awareness Month was done back in 1949. So over 70 years of continuing work of studying mental disorders, mental illness, how it affects people, and continuing to empower those individuals to speak up about their stories and their issues to encourage others to also speak up and seek the help that they need.
What is the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group doing to try to help overcome this stigma?
I can speak a little bit to what some of my staff are doing. I oversee some programs that specifically work with a wide variety of students in the San Luis Valley. And one of the things that my school-based specialists have really focused on is having just good conversations with junior high and high school students about what it just means to feel things. What's normal behavior? How do you know what you're feeling about a situation and what's okay to be happy or sad or angry about? And looking at overall how everybody goes through those same things, but sometimes we don't talk about them in the same ways. And so one of the ways that they're doing that, and our school districts have been amazing with allowing us to come in and present to these students during the day, coming in during English class or health class and giving presentations about all things related mental health, from good to the bad to the scary to how they can cope and what normal stress looks like and how to recognize if you might need to talk to somebody and what does talking to somebody really mean? You know, it's not a sign of weakness. You can talk to somebody without feeling shameful about what you're feeling. And we have had such a great response from the kids. Some of the students have taken last year and this year some of the things that we've presented to them and expanded on them for some of their school projects. They've created presentations. They've even presented to their students, their peers, topics on suicide or anxiety, depression, things that they took from us and felt like researching a little more and then talking to their peers about, which we know when they can talk to their peers and share some of those things, then that is so positive for them. Creating little flyers, creating cards that they can hand out in their schools, letting them know, like, we're all together. We all have things going on. Let's not be afraid to talk about them. So I think that's one of the things that we're doing within the schools. We're doing so much, but I've been really proud of our school team and the response that students have just embraced all of this mental health awareness information and gone forth and expanded on what we've given them.
That is awesome. I understand the stigma is more prevalent with the male population. Why is that?
A lot of males are fearful that it means that they're weak. I think in the male culture too, especially coming from a lot of the clients that I've worked with, it's this idea that men can't be anything but strong. And so the only emotion that's okay for them to show is anger, which is totally appropriate. And men aren't, you know, accustomed to talking about their feelings, talking about their problems. They a lot of times will say things like, I just go work out or I work and that helps me cope. So I think it's just kind of a cultural difference between men and women as a whole, as far as, you know, reaching out for help and admitting that they're struggling and not thinking that it's a weakness versus an issue that a lot of people have and deal with.
I think that, you know, the best things that we can do, regardless of cultural differences around bringing awareness to the stigma, is providing education, bringing awareness to the different topics. Like Azrael mentioned, just talking about it, sharing experiences, really normalizing the fact that, yes, 1 in 5 Americans suffer from a mental illness. And at some point in everyone's lifespan, people are going to have stressful events or traumatic events and need to work and process through that. And then I think really encouraging even the use of people first language, and so that we are identifying as a person with a struggle or a person with an illness versus I am illness. And I think those little things that we can do really do lend to helping people understand what it's like to have a mental illness or to struggle with these difficulties.
Working or working out, I mean, isn't that just kind of burying the problem or pushing it to the side? What suggestions would you have for men regarding mental health?
There's a lot of coping skills that work regardless of male or female. And so we talk about stress management techniques. We talk about self-care, which is huge. Working out is a great form of self-care, but there's a lot of other ways of doing it as well. And I think helping them understand that dealing with stress and handling stress in a meaningful way versus trying to bury it or avoid it coming at you is the difference. So while working out is a great coping skill, it's the purpose behind it and using it as a healthy coping skill versus an avoidant coping skill, along with the other various coping skills that may work for each individual as well.
Which again is why it's so important to reach out to a mental health specialist. Each situation, each person is unique. It's not a one-size-fit-all type of help or assistance or treatment that you offer.
Right.
Exactly.
What about women? I mean, I understand that they are twice as likely to suffer from depression.
It's correct, because I think women are twice as likely to reach out for the help and to acknowledge that they might be experiencing some depressive symptoms. In situations like we have going right now with COVID, you know, there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of anxiety, and people are adjusting to a different way of life, which can bring forth a lot of depression. And so you have those situations where it may be circumstantial depression, or it could be a longer term depressive symptom or issue that someone's dealing with. And so that, again, goes back to that importance of really seeking out that individualized care.
And I think that another point, when we look at, you know, women are twice as likely, and speaking to what Victoria said, you know, more likely to seek out the services, I think that oftentimes our data or the information that we have is only as good as those that report. And going back to when we talked about stigma and the stigma of men, and sometimes just culturally, the differences between genders and acceptable ways of feeling and asking for help and all of those things that are associated, all of those things tie in together. And so while women do seek out services more, and we can draw conclusions that they are twice as likely to suffer from depression, I think we also, it's important to understand or look at how many more women are willing to report that they need help. They're more willing to reach out for that support. And that's where sometimes we also get those numbers. When we're talking about even just the 1 in 5, 1 in 6, you know, the 10 million Americans that suffer from depression, or when we're looking at mental illness, to also know that that's what we know. And that when we're having conversations about what does mental health or mental illness really look like, we know what people are willing to report. And so there's so much more out there that we need to be aware of, which is why continuing to reduce that stigma and have conversations about it is so important.
What suggestions can you offer for someone who is hesitant to even consider getting some help?
I think it's important for people to know that therapy is really a conversation. You know, I always tell people, friends and family who might be hesitant, that everybody could use a therapist. It doesn't matter what you may or may not be struggling with. We all have stressful lives. We all have things going on. And sometimes you just need a person to talk to who isn't going to have any judgment or who doesn't have any emotional attachment to your life, so that you can give them that information, walk out the door and feel better about it. So it really becomes that conversation with somebody that can understand and help you understand yourself a little bit better. So it can be educational. It can be so many different things depending on what each person needs from that therapy session.
Going along with that, I think I always share with people that are hesitant that if you're thinking about it, that there's a need. And it's better to address the need before it becomes more of a crisis. I think going back to, we take our kids for wellness exams, and this is just another way to get wellness and to address things before it's critical. And again, going back to that normalizing process. Behavioral health and your behavioral mental health is just as important as your physical health. And if you're not addressing one, both are going to go out of whack. And so I think it comes back to, if you want to be healthy and happy and have whole health care, your behavioral health is part of that.
Well, you brought up children. What about parents and their children? What are some of the things that parents should watch for in their children? And when should they act and reach out to your organization?
I think going back to what Victoria said was, children and adults, but obviously, you know, when we're teaching children how to learn about emotions and how to learn about what happy and sad and angry looks like and how to handle those things, there is no early enough time to start talking. You know, it's never too soon. And I think that parents have so much going on that oftentimes when they realize that there needs to be some support or some help is when they've lost that ability to help their child handle and verbalize, if they're old enough, what they're feeling without there being a crisis. And we see that a lot with kiddos who don't really understand and know exactly how to handle what's happening in their lives, or there's things that are happening that they can't talk about. So we really try to talk to counselors in our schools about helping their parents who are saying, I just don't know what to do. talking to them a little bit about what is just overall emotional wellness for their child mean? What are some ideas and tricks about how to teach a child how to say that they're sad or that they're angry or that they're, you know, happy, whatever it might be, when they are really struggling and those behaviors become just so dysregulated? We do really want to encourage them to know that there is support. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. There are so many things going on. And we talk to teachers about that all the time. We give them the tools. We want to also share those with parents. We've heard this multiple times when we talk to parents about bring them in or let's talk to them. Let's see what's going on. So many of them feel like there's something they've done wrong. And we really want to help them understand that we're in this together to help them figure out how to best help their child, that we're not pointing fingers at the parents about what they did or didn't do wrong to help their child know how to handle their emotions. So that's one of the biggest things that we talk to parents about, is that we're not looking at them as failures as being parents because their child needs some support and some help. We all do at one point in time or another, just like Victoria said. And so we want to be able to offer that to children as well.
Well, what about older adults? I understand they can actually suffer from unique issues that are different than the rest of society.
We talk a lot about mental health throughout your lifespan is important. It's never too soon or too late, and life happens. And so how you struggle with change or how you deal with transitions can be a personalized kind of thing. And so I do think as older adults are looking at some of those lifestyle changes or transitional changes, there can be unique challenges or unique emotions that go along with that that can be important to work through.
And suicide prevention, what resources are available here locally?
So here locally, we have our crisis hotline for our center, which is 719-589-3671. The state of Colorado also has a Colorado crisis line where somebody can call to receive immediate help if they feel they're in a crisis. The number is 1-844-493-8255, or they can also send the text TALK to 38255.
In addition to that, we have also offered multiple suicide prevention trainings. We've trained students, we've trained teachers, we've trained lots of people at school districts. We've had businesses that have asked for us to do suicide prevention trainings. Raising awareness on the issues around suicide awareness and suicide prevention, as well as how to also access services. So that is one thing that we really try to do with anyone who asks. And then we have a walk-in crisis center as well, our Mi Esperanza Wellness Center, and that's at 311 San Juan in Alamosa. And they are a great resource and available to anyone, any age. They can walk in. They don't need an appointment. Someone is there to talk with them.
What are some of the actions one can take to care for their mental well-being throughout their life?
Reaching out anytime, not waiting, like Victoria had mentioned, not waiting until it becomes last minute. I feel like a lot of the stigma around actually getting help is being seen in a mental health center or behavioral health treatment facility of any kind, because we do live in a small area. So people know everybody, it seems like, and we can offer help to people in different ways to get them through the door and not feel like they are going to be seen and judged by people, you know, out of the community. But I think reaching out is huge. If people need to have some type of support, it's extremely important for people to reach out for that and learn those ways to take care of yourself. Because I think even us as mental health professionals, we don't always know what the meaning of self-care is until we've been trained in it better and we know why it works, why it doesn't work. And so therapy or mental health professionals can offer those skills as well to people to know, how do you take care of yourself? What does it look like when you are struggling and when you are highly stressed, such as right now, where most people are extremely overwhelmed and stressed, and knowing that it's time to increase your self-care, it's time to increase being kind to yourself, and knowing what that looks like for each individual person.
I think it's really all of us learning how to recognize our own symptoms, maybe our own triggers. Really, our minds and our bodies will give us signals when we're overdoing it. But if we don't learn to pay attention and recognize those signals and then don't have the skills to address them, we can create difficulties.
Victoria, what are some of those signals that people should be watching for?
So it can be things like difficulty sleeping, change in eating, change in overall mood, things that once brought you joy that no longer do. You know, I will share with people that I recognize one of my signs is how I sleep. For me, when I notice like, okay, I'm not sleeping well, my dreams are really weird, I need to go ahead and practice some self-care. It can be those things such as clenching of the jaw, identifying tension headaches or tension in your jaw. So it's those physical and emotional symptoms, maybe increase in crying for no reason, So it's really learning about yourself and recognizing what those symptoms can look like.
Bonnie, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I was just going to expand a little bit on what Jamie said, but Victoria definitely expanded as well. Is looking at the whole overall framework, basic framework of self-care and looking at physically, what are we doing to take care of ourselves? Are we eating well, sleeping well? When we're sick, are we going to the doctor? Are we doing those things? Psychologically, what are we doing to laugh, to enjoy things? You know, what leisurely things are we doing? What things are we doing to kind of check out and take a minute for ourselves, as Victoria was talking about? Are we balanced? You know, are we doing way too much in one area or another in our life where we're letting something else sacrifice? Are we always working so much that we're not taking time for the leisure and we're risking burnout or unhealthy eating, sleeping, and healthcare because we're just too busy to do those things? So it really is about looking at the whole picture. And for everybody, it's a little bit different. Somebody may have more physical self-care or somebody might have more spiritual self-care. There is a lot of difference in that. But it is important to understand that there is kind of that basic framework of making sure that there is balance in all of those areas so that we don't end up overdoing in one area of another, neglecting ourselves in an area that can keep us healthy.
How is the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group continuing to offer services during this time?
As soon as we knew that this was going on, I want to say that I'm going to brag about our agency a little bit because we took some really quick steps to make sure that our staff was protected as well as the clients, to move them out and provide telehealth services through a telehealth platform that is HIPAA compliant. It's still confidential. And so people can access it through their cell phones, through their iPads or a computer if they have that. And we've also worked with the community who are still needing those services that may not have those tools in figuring out how to get that for them. That's one way we're reaching out.
Victoria, did you want to add to that?
So I would say the things that we're trying to do is we're still accepting new patients, new clients. We want to make sure that our services are accessible to the community, knowing that in times like this, people definitely have needs. As Jamie mentioned, we quickly moved all of our services to a teletherapy platform so that we can continue to offer those services. We are still meeting with clients who have higher need in a face-to-face limited capacity. And so if that need exists, we're making those kinds of arrangements. And then I think the other thing we're really doing is just trying to, again, get the message out, address those concerns around stigma so that people can access the services that they need and they feel confident to do so.
Your organization has several locations and various services available throughout the San Luis Valley. Who are you driven to serve and why?
As an agency, we definitely strive to serve the underrepresented and those that have historically been underserved. We look to accommodate clients and make sure that any barriers to care are addressed. So we really encourage everybody to reach out.
So I was just going to add that, you know, our goal is really to meet the needs of the citizens of the San Luis Valley. We know that there can be barriers to getting those services. So it's really important for us to have those outlining resources, those satellite offices, so that we can meet people where they live and work and really address those barriers and those determinants to care.
And how long have y'all been serving this area?
This year will be our 50-year anniversary. So the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group has been in existence for 50 years, and we have seen, you know, growth and different change through that time. But the center has really had a commitment to providing the services that we offer and meeting the clients with the needs that they have.
And what are some of the best ways for someone to reach you?
We try to really make sure that we're available, whether it is our universal number that is answered at any of our offices. After hours, they can call that same number. And our phones run through dispatch so that they can get emergency services. Our Facebook is available for questions or if they need assistance with reaching out. We have tried to make sure that some of our program staff are available and have emails accessible to anyone who would like to reach out, especially to our school staff in my program. We've really tried to make it as easy as possible to access care or ask questions about care as we can.
And our general number is 719-589-3671. And we can be reached at our website, slbbhg.org, on Facebook at slbbhg, and on Instagram at slbbhg, as we post daily content and daily resources.
And we have an email address that you can send us questions to as well. That's info@slbbhg.org.
Is there anything else that any of you would like to mention, ladies?
I just think it's important for people to know that we're all here for whatever people might need help with. As supervisors, we're willing to help people walk through things as well, and then supporting our staff and making sure that they have what they need to make sure that they can provide for the community as well.
I guess I would add that oftentimes when people think about therapy or coming to treatment, they really think about this just kind of talk therapy, which is holistically the premise of coming to therapy. But I think it's important for people to understand that there are so many different things that we have to offer. There are so many different modalities. There are different ways that people can receive care. And we've tried really hard to train staff and be available with different modalities, as well as providing just general support, as well as things like AccuDetox and other ways of supporting people in overall treatment or therapy. So if they're wondering, you know, or they're skeptical of just kind of what does therapy really mean or how does that really happen, just to give us a call and to talk to us about what we can offer them and how we can offer that to them.
All right. Well, ladies, I want to thank you for joining us to discuss Mental Health Awareness Month. Just as we attend to our physical health, we all need to keep our own and our family's mental health in mind. If you're in need of help, please don't hesitate to reach out to the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group for assistance. All of their contact information, of course, will be on this podcast webpage as well for you to reference or use if or when you need. And remember, as John Green is quoted as saying, there is hope, even when your brain tells you there isn't. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adam.
If you are anxious, scared, and feel like you're experiencing a crisis locally, or just want to talk with someone that won't judge your feelings, you can call the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group at 719-589-3671. That's 719-589-3671. Or you can call the Colorado Crisis Hotline at 1-844-493-8255. That's 1-844-493-8255. Or you can text TALK to 38255 to receive mental health crisis support. Someone is available 24 hours a day to take your call and help you through difficult times. Remember, you don't have to go through this alone.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events, more listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word, too, by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please, patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your friends, family, and neighbors. We all love this area and want to see it flourish, and you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.